Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 36, newly married. And all I keep hearing is, oh, is this the year it happens for you? Or, aren't you at least trying? Or, you haven't got many years left, you know? Yeah, I do know. Thanks. But what I don't know is if I actually want a baby. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I speak to new mums, non-mums, baby wanters, baby rejectors to figure out whether I want to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I speak to Sital, who is going through her third round of IVF.
You invest so much time and money and effort going to the clinic every single day and all of that. You just think, well, it was for nothing, you know, and it's very hard.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How was...
No, how was your Christmas?
Never, how was yours?
Never, how was yours?
Mine was good. I feel like I went to a few parties where there were a lot of kid people. So either people who are pregnant, people who have children, or people who brought their children to the parties. And this is definitely not a reason to have children, and it's not a reason that will really affect whether I decide to do it or not do it. But I do think if I go down the route of not babying, I'm still going to have to go to all the parties with everyone else and their babies and all the baby talk. So in a way, I feel like I might as well just do it so at least I have my own baby talk to bring to the party.
Do you think the mulling would ever end, though? Like, do you think if you decided not to but still went to the parties that actually in your mind you'd still be thinking, oh, maybe should I be to babying?
No, because honestly, I look at it and go, like, one of the parties that I went to, everyone had to leave at 10:45 at night.
Sounds like a dream.
I didn't get there. I didn't get to this party until about 8:30. They had to leave at 10:45 to get home for their babysitters. And I'm like, mate, that for me is not a good party.
That might have been for the mums, though, because honestly, 11 o'clock for me is late. I like a good early night now.
So it made me go, maybe I just need to have one so I can...
Did you not bring out the Troy
you can't
stories.
Be enjoying them. No, but what I've started doing now is, as well as going, oh, this is like the time this thing happened to my dog, I do, oh, this thing happened to one of my friends. So, for example, one of my friends had bought her little boy who she'd just started weaning him a couple of weeks before that, and he'd got this really bad rash everywhere, and she'd taken him to the doctors and they were like, oh, yeah, it's eczema, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well. One of my friends, her little boy, when she started weaning, he also came out in this rash that looked like eczema, but actually it was an allergy-related thing, and maybe it's an allergy thing. And she was like, oh my God, I'm going to take him back to the doctor. So basically I've diagnosed an allergy based on other people's stories. So I can still get involved in the convo.
You are actually a baby expert, and this podcast is only making your knowledge grow.
Well, we were in... Apple's best parenting advice podcast. So you're welcome, friends.
I love how we're parenting advice. Yeah, really. Ask me about mine then. Here's some parenting advice.
Okay. Yeah, how was yours?
Christmas, wonderful, so cute. Like I was just so cute, like Chester on Christmas morning. Although he was more interested in like wrapping and the boxes than the actual toys.
Don't joke. The dancing sloth that you got sings the Lazy Song by Bruno Mars is his favourite thing in the world.
He puts his head on it because it moves as well. So he like uses it like a cushion, but likes the movement on his head. Oh, it was cute, very cute. But then as a New Year's present on New Year's Day, Chester pooed the bath for me. So that was nice. He was squeezing his squeezy pig in the bath that squirts water. And until now, he hasn't figured out that he can squeeze it and it squirts water. I think he just thinks I do it.
Oh, okay.
And he was squeezing it. And then I was seeing, like, he was squeezing it with all his might. So he was making a noise like, as he was squeezing
it. He just wanted to get the maximum water out of the squeezy pig.
He really wanted to get the water out. And then he farted, which I thought was really funny. I was like, he's putting all his effort in and he's farted. And then he farted again. And I was like, oh no, I know what this is like, what is going to happen here? And like in my mind, it was like, right, do I take him over to the toilet and hold him over the toilet? But then he's going to be really cold because he's just got out of the bath. Or actually, is it just happening now? And as I was thinking these things, it just happened anyway. And I saw the floaters and there was like more than one.
Ooh.
Only semi-solid as well, like not a dream. So yeah, I had to like sacrifice a towel, get him out, get him dressed, all the time thinking, oh my God, there's still floaters in the bath. Because Ed wasn't around, so it was like, just had to kind of figure everything out and as I go. But Ed did Dettol the bath for me afterwards. Good. But I did fish the poo out with my hands.
Great. Happy New Year, everyone. Mm-hmm.
So this is my third cycle now. For the previous two cycles, I didn't really talk about it much beyond my close friends and family. And it's completely a personal choice, but I found that when the last cycle failed, the TTC, so the Trying to Conceive community on Instagram, really helped me. I found understanding, being able to talk to people as well. They could completely relate to what I was going through, and it all just resonated on every level. And I wanted to be able to give that back to other people. So once I felt stronger, obviously not in the aftermath of the failed cycle, but once a few months had gone past, I was in a position to be able to discuss it, share my story on my blog and then on Instagram and social media. And through that, I was overwhelmed by the response I got from friends, from colleagues, acquaintances, even strangers. Just people telling me about their various situations as well. And I also want to do my bit to kind of destigmatize the issue in the Indian community, because a lot of the people who contacted me are Indian and they felt that they couldn't talk about it for whatever reason. And luckily, my husband is on board and he's supportive of my decision to speak out. And they were very appreciative of that.
I feel like IVF anyway is, even in any community, is still slightly taboo because there's, you know, having known friends who have gone through it, it's almost that thing of feeling like you have somehow failed because you can't do it the normal, in inverted commas, way.
Yeah, there's a huge sense of failure around it and shame and guilt and regret. And I went through all of this, especially in the previous cycle, because the first one was NHS. The second one was a private clinic, and it was just so overwhelming. Even though they prepped you and told you what was involved in every step of the way, you can't really know what to expect until you go through it, really, and how you're going to be feeling. And so now I have the benefit of experience, and this time around has been completely different, my approach, because also I've been able to move away from work and I've got that flexibility. I've been able to work on my mindset and cultivate a more positive outlook, which has made all the difference. Yeah.
So when you wrote, obviously you wrote your blog before you put it out anywhere.
Yeah.
How did it feel at the moment that you went, okay, I'm going to publish this?
It was quite nerve-wracking, actually. I'd written it about a couple of months after I'd had the news that my cycle had failed. And I didn't really have an intention to share it. I thought I just need to evacuate my feelings, get them all down on paper and try and make sense of it a little bit and digest it in my own way. And then I just sat on it for a few months because I thought it's a big thing to share. It's extremely personal. Do I want everyone to know about this as well?
Yeah.
Because even though I'd shared it with friends and family, it's very different to put it out there on your blog and have anybody come across it via Google. Yeah. Not to mention the extended family as well and what they'll think about it and the way that my family would react. So on both sides, both mine and my husband's. But then we discussed it, my husband and I, and you know, the reasons for doing so was to help other people, to help ourselves as well, and to give people an insight into what it is. Because I think a lot of people know people going through IVF, but you don't know the process, and how can you blame them?
Yeah.
You can't really accuse them of being ignorant if you don't explain it yourself, if you're in a position to be able to do so.
Yeah.
And so that's why I eventually hit publish. And I think part of me was expecting some sort of negative feedback as well. I guess whenever I publish anything, whether it's a restaurant review or chef interviews, there's a little part of me that thinks, oh God, you know, someone's going to come up and say something and criticize. And you open yourself up to it when you publish anything. I think it was just a general fear, but it was an overwhelmingly positive response of support and people also discussing what they'd been through as well. So it made me feel less alone, less abnormal.
Yeah.
Which is just very comforting when you're going through something like that.
Yeah, because I imagine it can be quite an isolating experience.
Very much so,
Did you get any negative reaction?
Not from the post. A few years ago from a friend of mine when I discussed that this is what we were going to do, we're going to go down this route to try and be parents. She was supportive, but then at the same time said that, you know, she wasn't sure that that was the right decision. In a way, it's not something that she would do because maybe we should just accept that naturally we were unable to have children. And that's just kind of the way of the world, which was a little bit shocking.
What do you even say to somebody?
I didn't know what to say for about a good few seconds. I was just stunned and silent. But, you know, I respect that opinion. But nowadays, science, you know, offers so many possibilities. So
yeah, that's the whole point.
Explore that option if we can. And I'm not against the idea of adoption or surrogacy or anything else.
Yeah.
But if we are able to have our own child,
of course,
why would we not try that first?
Yeah. just casually trying to watch my favourite show, Bachelor in Paradise. I know it's ridiculous. We're getting towards the final now. The couple that they think, it's like Love Island, but American. The couple they think are the most solid have won a date. The date is babysitting somebody else's children so they can see whether they be good parents or not. A, that's a rubbish date. B, why do you assume that they all want to have kids? Come on, guys. So before the IVF, before all of that, had you always wanted to be a mum, or was it kind of, you're shaking your head?
No, not so much. No, I mean, it was kind of a distant dream, I think. I've never grown up wanting to be a mum as such. I just thought, I'll get married by about 30 and I'll have a couple of kids and it'll all be fine. And, you know, great job and house and car and all of that. Because that's what you're primed to believe, I think, from TV and from your family, from what you see, your own experience. And then actually, I got married in, I think I was 26. And as time went on, I lived with my in-laws for a couple of years as well. And then it was a little bit for both sides. So then we got our own place. We wanted to enjoy just having our freedom and traveling. So time just kind of crept away. And then before we knew it, it's 5-6 years. And I still kind of didn't feel ready. And the thing that changed it for me was when I fell pregnant around Christmas 3-4 years ago. And it was a total shock. I always thought when I saw pregnant on a stick that I would freak out and be really scared. And actually, I was just over the moon and really excited. And
was this an accident or were you kind of trying? Okay, fine.
I mean, it was a surprise.
You were not trying, but I get you.
Yeah, exactly. It was a nice surprise. And that's what shocked me the most, my reaction to it, because I thought I would always just rebel and push back.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately that ended in an early miscarriage. And then in a way it was good because it kind of put a bit of a fire up my backside to then try and make some appointments, see if there were any issues, because it had been at that point quite a few years since we got married. So
yeah. And so from that point then, what happened? So you went to get some tests done and they said, naturally, did they tell you that naturally it wasn't going to work, or like what was the kind of...
They put it down to unexplained infertility, which is quite a generic term. Yeah, exactly. So we got referrals, we spoke to specialists, and we got the first round of IVF through the NHS. And that was unsuccessful. And we decided for the second round, actually, because I didn't have any embryos to freeze, I would have had to pay. And so we thought, if we're paying, then let's go private and, give it a shot that way. Because we'd known people who'd into the clinic that I'm at now, and they'd had successful results, so we decided to go down that path instead.
So
for the NHS, my experience was that you get certain protocols, they deliver all the meds in one go, and you're pretty much left to your own devices. You go in for a blood test every now and again and a scan. Then after the transfer, you have a couple of weeks, you wait, and you have a pregnancy test. You just email them the results and they take it from there.
Okay.
It's quite hands-off in a way.
Yeah.
And then that's why it was such a shock to go to the private clinic, because you go in every single day for 2 weeks during the stimulation phase for daily blood tests at 7:30.
Whoa.
Every other day you have a scan. And then after that, you wait for about anything between 2 to 5 hours. They'll analyze your blood sample and then they call you back to tell you which dosage of meds to take within which time frame. So either 15 minutes or within the next 2 to 3 hours. And that can change. Every single day it was different. And this third cycle is completely different to my second cycle at the end of last year. So there are injections, there are pills, there are pessaries and suppositories.
Oh my God.
There's a lot going on as well. And in the second week, you might be required to come back for repeat bloods and scans. So if you can, it's best to completely clear your schedule, not make any plans that can't be cancelled.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like a full-time job.
Yeah, it really is. And last time I was working, luckily my boss is a close family friend, and so he was in the picture about everything and gave me the flexibility I needed to undertake the process as easily as possible. And I did do a bit of work and as and when I could, but I wasn't in the office, because if I was doing some of the injections where you need to reconstitute, so you draw the water up, inject it into the powder, draw it back up again, and depending, sometimes you have to take 600 units, which is 4 bottles. So you're, it it's can like take some
like
time.
It's like you're being your own chemist and nurse. Like and
yeah, I mean, I can show you the sharps bin afterwards. It's full of all the various injections and needles. It's horrendous. But yeah, I collected them all this time because I'd like to just spread them out and kind of line them up and look back through my journey. And
wow.
Yeah. And this time is completely different because I'm not working. And it has really helped, I think, to be able to just clear my mind as well. And fully focus on what I need to do and get into a positive headspace, because it is just completely like an assault on all your senses. And
yeah, because that's the thing. I'm sitting here and I'm like, you talk about it really yeah. kind of calmly and really kind of matter of fact. Yeah. And I'm like, but it feels like such an insane thing that for two weeks of your life, you're basically your own science project almost. Like, so where are you at in that phase at the minute? So how far?
I'm in the 2 week wait. So you have the transfer once the eggs are fertilized, and then you wait 2 weeks and the next blood test will tell me whether I'm pregnant or not. So approaching okay. the end of that. So the big day is coming up in a few days' time, and we haven't revealed that to anyone this time. Last time we did share it with a few people. I've shared most of my journey. So the collection, yeah. the transfer, how I've been feeling. But this time, I think I want to keep that one quiet and just give my husband and I the space to deal with that. The news, whatever it is, in our own way, before we share that with the world.
How do you feel at this point when you think about that day?
Very nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I feel nervous on your behalf. I feel really emotional on your behalf almost for it, because I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I've been, for the past 3 weeks, I've been pretty positive. I've had a couple of minor wobbles. One of them was the progesterone injection when I was facing the prospect of having to do it myself. And it's a 2-inch needle to be inserted in the thigh or the backside, and it's intramuscular. And it's just, you have to do it right, otherwise it causes a lot of pain. And there's bruising, so it hurts to sit at the moment. And my husband, thankfully, is able to administer that one. I do everything else. I'm fine with the subcutaneous, but he was out one day and you have to do it at the same time, okay. ideally.
Yeah.
And so he was coming back a bit later than planned, and I tried to do it and I couldn't, my hand was wobbling and I got into a bit of a state and I felt very emotional and I just waited for him.
Yeah.
Because it's a really sharp, long, thick needle.
Yeah, no thanks. I'm
like, but ooh. Yeah, I've mostly been positive throughout the past 3 weeks, but as the time approaches, I'm starting to feel a bit nervous. So it's taking a lot of energy to kind of control my thoughts and, you know, stay within that positive kind of mindset.
So tonight I taught a new yoga class to a new group of students, and at the end of it I asked for feedback, and one of the students said to me, oh, you know, I find it really motivational because I look at you, and I'm not saying that your body is just down to yoga, but obviously, you know, it makes you look great, but you haven't had children, have you? And I said no, and she was like, oh yeah, well, that also explains why your body's so great. So then I'm thinking, does that mean that from that point on, they will judge my yoga class on how I look? So they'll go, oh, well, she's a good yoga teacher because she looks good, or she's not a good yoga teacher because she's got loads of saggy belly fat because she had a kid. Troy, stop barking. Troy. Not a good time, bro. Not a good time. One thing I was going to ask you, which feel free to not, but I am interested, how much is it to go through the process of IVF?
If you're paying for an NHS cycle, I believe it's around £4,000-£5,000, but that may depend on where you live as well. So I'm based in Barnet, the borough of Barnet. For a private clinic, again, it depends on which one you go to. The one that I'm at is has some of the best success rates in the country. And because it is such a bespoke program and there are so many tests and scans and meds, I think you're looking at around £10,000 on average.
Holy
yeah. But then that can change because they can't tell you which meds you'll be taking in advance, which procedures you'll need as well.
Yeah.
Whether you'll be doing IVF or ICSI.
Okay.
ICSI is more expensive. Whether you have embryos that you want to freeze as well, so there's a cost involved with that. There are add-ons, and I know at the moment that's a very topical discussion, and that's a choice as well. There's the HFEA website where you can, there's a traffic light system,
and
you can refer to that before making a decision on whether you want to go for certain drugs or procedures, you know, like the hysteroscopy to kind of prepare your lining and womb for...
Is that the scrape?
Yeah. Oh, God. When you put it that way. I think it's scratch, but... the scrape. Yeah,
people have told me about the scrape. So when you said scrape. That, I was like, maybe that's the
yeah,
scrape.
Yeah, that is the yeah. one.
Yeah. Rough it all up in there. Yeah. It sounds really awful, but apparently, yeah, it's quite...
Because there was that story, was it last week, I believe, about the wellness company offering fertility drips at Westfield?
Oh, no, I didn't see
that. Completely unproven.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And someone was saying it's just an expensive way to kind of hydrate yourself, basically.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, yeah, just get a coconut
because,
water.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had optional drips as well, and that's to kind of balance hormones, but it's all proven. It's all approved by the clinic. Yeah. And I didn't get it done in Westfield while I was like having my hair and nails done and a bit of shopping on the side.
But you know, when you're in the process of it and actually if the clinics are saying to you, oh, we have this other thing you can have, we have this other thing. I imagine it must be quite hard to not go, like, if you're at this point in time, it's because you want it really badly. So you'd almost be like, just give me everything. Mm. Yes, I'll have one of everything.
Yeah, which sometimes it does leave you open to abuse, I imagine, if you're a clinic that's a little bit unscrupulous.
Yeah, true.
But thankfully, you know, Dr. Google, there's a lot of information out there. You can speak to former patients. There's a drop-in clinic and everything is optional. But, you know, we took the clinic up on some of these add-ons because I guess if you're in it, you just might as well give it your best shot. I don't want to look back and think, well, if I'd taken that drug or done that procedure, maybe it would have made a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you have to analyze everything separately.
The only thing I can compare this to is like, so when I was getting married, you lose a kind of, you almost lose a concept of the finances. So you go, oh, okay, well, we're already spending like 14 grand. So this other thing will come along and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's £500. You're like, okay, it's whatever, fine. It's only £500.
Drop in the ocean.
Anything else you would go, yeah, that's quite a lot of money still, but then you just, so is it similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, when you go private, every step of the way, like sometimes I feel if you breathe, they'll charge you for that as well, you know? So you
sat on that chair, we're going to charge you for that, yeah.
You know, you sat in our waiting room and you had a cup of tea and a biscuit, so that's going to be £500, please, you know? But yeah, you're right, actually, you do, it's amazing how quickly you just become desensitized to that. And I was asked previously about budget as well. And it's hard if you go for certain clinics for them to give you a specific amount because of all of these. And maybe other clinics, I don't really have any experience of them, but I know for mine, it is a ballpark because of all
these.
It's
so varied.
Yeah, and because it is so personal and it's so different each time, you just don't know how many meds you're going to need. Yeah. And you can, when you get the prescriptions, you can go to places like, I believe Asda has some cheaper prices than just going to the recommended pharmacy that the clinic wants you to go to. So there are ways around it.
So I don't want to kind of make you kind of go through it all again, but after... I feel like having gone through all of this stuff and what you put your body through mentally and physically to then find out it is bad news, like what kind of goes through your brain when that is happening?
It's pretty devastating. Yeah. The last time we found out, my husband and I, we were in Soho and we were going for a coffee and we got the call. And they give you the news and it's just the culmination of the past month. You know, it all just... kind of comes crushing down on you, really, because you do so much, you invest so much time and money and effort, you know, if you're working as well, you've taken time off work, going to the clinic every single day.
You've been very, so many hopes as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, like, all the hopes. Yeah. You've been very meticulous with taking the meds at the right time and in the right dosage. And all of that, you just think, well, it was for nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very hard. There are tears and, you know, a lot of regrets and anger as well that your body just can't do what it's meant to do naturally, in that, you know, you find yourself in this situation. And that's why you try not to get yourself too excited when the signs are good. So this is my third cycle and things have been a lot better than the previous one.
Yeah.
But you have to try and manage that a little bit and just to... offset the emotion on the other side.
Oh my God! Oh well, I'm hoping and praying and said I can't send you any more positive vibes than like I have. I literally, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about sharing it all on social and with people and being more open is that, you know, I feel that as cheesy as it sounds, the universe is sort of, you know, on my side, and there is a lot of support for us out there. And I've, as tough as it is to talk about it sometimes as well, because you just want to retreat and, you know, kind of just take care of yourself and not have a conversation about it. But it has helped me actually to come through it. And I'd like to I'd like to think that the stars will align this time around, time will tell.
Fingers, toes, everything crossed for you. How is it with friends and family? Because obviously they can support you in a way, but they kind of understand, but they don't understand. So how has that been?
I guess it depends on who it is and the type of person they are. So some family members are really quite pragmatic, and that's good when you just need that level of detachment. Others are very emotionally invested.
Yeah.
And so I guess if you need a bit of sympathy, then you know where to go for that. But it's hard for them as well sometimes to be able to support you and to know what to say, because, you know, the worst thing is someone just saying, well, just relax, you know, take it easy. And you're like, but how can I when I'm jabbing myself like four times a day and it hurts and, you know, I'm bruised and it's just, I feel like a pincushion, you know?
Yeah.
And I get where they're coming from, because, you know, you want to try and reduce stress as much as possible. That is the best thing to do. But it is a highly stressful situation by the same token. So how can you just, and also you can't work out really. They advise you to take it easy.
This is the other thing. It's like you don't even have the kind of distractions of daily life, because in that time, if you're taking 2 weeks to basically do nothing but inject yourself with all these drugs and God knows what else, then it's really hard, because you don't even have that kind of daily normal to at least lose yourself in.
I know. And I just joined a new gym a few months ago, and there's a lovely new class, Fitness Rebounding, which is basically mini trampolines. And that was so much fun. I was getting into it. And then, this whole cycle started, so I didn't think maybe jumping up and down would be a good idea.
Yeah,
especially not at this stage. If I just, you know, had a false move and then ended up on my face on the floor, that's probably not the best thing.
No, you have to do everything that you can to look after yourself in this little window.
But to be honest, you're quite drained, because the extra progesterone going in with the injections plus the suppositories are really sap your energy. So it takes a lot just to kind of get out of the house and go for a walk. This week has been particularly hard. But I have been trying to fill my time with just seeing friends, going to nice restaurants and bakeries. And
food is always the answer
for me, for sure. So that's been good, actually, being able to see people and kind of talk about it and get their support, and, you know, and also just have a conversation about something else, see what they're up to as well.
So. Exactly. That's again like your own little bit of normal life.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh dear. So do you feel a level of pressure from family or friends in the sense of it? Because I definitely, this is one of the things with me where I, you know, I have days where I definitely think that I want children. And then I have other days where, like you were saying earlier, I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready. Am I ready? But there's definitely a bit of kind of family pressure that they're kind of going, oh, well, we would really like some grandchildren, please.
Yeah, of course, which is only natural. And I used to get it a lot at the beginning, probably for the first, I'd say, 3 to 5 years of our marriage, we'd get it a lot, especially from older family members. And it's only natural, really, like, you know, they want to have grandkids, other people are having them, you get married, you know. But I just didn't feel ready, really. And the more people talked about it, the less I wanted to do it, because it just, you know, felt like such an imposition. Like, why are you telling me that I need to do this? And, you know, it's a big commitment and we'll do it when we're ready. But in a way, some of them were right, because the older you get, the harder it is. And I find myself in this situation now, and there is an element of regret that I wish I'd listened. You know, I wish I hadn't been so stubborn just for the sake of it, because I don't know, maybe I have always had this issue, but at least if I had tried to take some steps earlier, I might have been able to kind of counteract it and do something about it. And we might, you know, have a child by now.
But hindsight is a wonderful and evil thing.
Oh, isn't it just? Isn't it just? And it's taken a lot to kind of try and forgive myself. I think that's a big thing. In the second cycle, I was just so angry that I was in that situation, that I was having to do all this when other people could just get pregnant so easily. A lot of jealousy, all these really negative, you know, feelings that would eat me up. And over the past year, I've tried to kind of just accept my situation and my reality, because it just is what it is. And the more I talk about my problems, I realize that everybody has issues. They're going through something. And if it's not them, it's someone close to them.
So my sister, she has a little boy now, but she had a miscarriage before that. And she said afterwards, a bit like you were saying, like after she'd had the miscarriage, she felt like everywhere she looked, there were people with babies, people who were pregnant. And you're like, well, this isn't fair. Why has this happened to me? And look at all these other people and they're having it. And
I was going to meet a friend a couple of weeks ago, and I was walking to the cafe, and within the space of about 10 seconds, there were three women who walked along with protruding bellies, hands on them, you know, just looking all serene and happy. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like,
get out of my face.
Yeah, and it's the worst stories are the ones where people just, you know, they have the surprise pregnancies. They're not even together. It was just an accident. And, you know, it just happens. And, you know, they'll struggle because they're wrestling with maybe do they want the baby? Do they not? You know, but you just think, wow, at least you have that choice. You know?
But, you know, like you were saying, like that you kind of, you almost feel this guilt and regret that you look back and think, oh, mate, you know, maybe I should have done it sooner. Obviously, we don't know how this is going to go. But hopefully, if it goes well, then maybe the time wasn't right then. And actually, the time is right now. And so
I'd like to think that, I'm a completely different person now than compared to who I was, you know, in my early 30s. And actually, the last couple of years have been a really steep learning curve. And through, you know, changes in jobs and, you know, friendship groups and, you know, even through my blog, actually, I launched that 3 years ago. And, you know, my social circle has expanded a lot, you know, because people who I talk to online have become friends and you get a different perspective and you have that common passion for food in this case.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah. So... Oh, well, fingers crossed it's going to be
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so hopefully then you'll be that person walking down the street cradling your bump and being like,
I hope so, yeah. I mean, I'm lucky to get to this stage to have the two-week wait as well, because I realise that some women, when they collect the eggs, you know, the eggs don't fertilise. So that's the end of your journey right there. There's no transfer. And you've had your stimulation and your life has been turned upside down and that's it. It's a very abrupt end.
Yeah.
Which it hadn't really crossed my mind until I read someone's story of it, and it's extremely sad.
I love Sita.
So do I.
She's so lovely. Sita's story obviously is not over yet. So next episode, we will catch up with Sita and find out the results. But obviously we mentioned in there, Camilla, who didn't mind me mentioning, that you had a miscarriage before you had Chester.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. It's fine to talk about it. Probably more fine to talk about it because I now have Chester. I feel like it's probably more painful for people to talk about when they're in a situation where they don't have a successful pregnancy. But so we started trying on the wedding night. Pretty much, sorry, too much info.
you've dished out a lot of info on this podcast, so it's all good.
No, we started trying straight away. We, you know, as soon as we got married, and I fell pregnant pretty quick. In fact, I did have what they call a chemical pregnancy first, which is a very, very early miscarriage. It's because I'm really eager and had done a very early pregnancy test that came up faint positive. But then about 2 days later, I came on what I thought was my period, when in fact, because I'd had the faint positive, which is really rare for it to be wrong, it probably was a chemical pregnancy.
What does that mean? I don't know what that is.
It's like the beginning of a pregnancy, but it's not viable.
Okay.
So you lose it really quickly. So it does almost just feel like a period. It's not as full on as miscarrying, obviously, further along. So actually that happened first. But I didn't really mourn that or feel the same way about it as I did with my, what I would call my actual miscarriage. So we ended up going on our honeymoon a bit later. We held off on our honeymoon, did it a couple of months later. So actually, I'd found out I was pregnant before we went on honeymoon, which wasn't ideal because we were going to Mexico and I had all sorts of things going on because I had to have certain vaccinations to go. And they had to check it out to see if it was okay for me to have them and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, I flew. So when we were in Mexico, I didn't feel great. And I was pregnant, but we were very excited about it. We knew when we got back, we had about a week to go before the 12-week scan. So unfortunately, in the last part of the holiday, I did have a tiny bit of bleeding, but it was really small. And from what I'd read, I wasn't too worried about it. Got back from Mexico and I was actually at university about a week later. It was a sort of Saturday university.
And at this point, this was like 3 days before 3 days your 12-week scan.
The scan, yeah. And basically, we were watching this video at uni and I needed the loo, so I just nipped out to the toilet and there was quite a lot of blood and I immediately knew and it was horrific because I had to go back up to get my things from the university room and sort of half tell my teacher because nobody knew, obviously, that I was pregnant at that point. I had kept it completely a secret and I wasn't near home, but I was near mum and dad's. So I went back to mum and dad's, panicking all the way, and called Ed on the way. Only dad was in. Dad was just amazing. He was so amazing. He we'd called 111 because I wasn't entirely sure what I should do.
Yeah.
Deep down, I knew what was happening. There wasn't really a part of me that thought, no, this can happen and there can be quite a lot and it's still okay. I just felt in my heart of hearts something is really wrong.
Yeah.
And they told me to lay down and elevate my feet. And actually, they wanted to send an ambulance, which I really didn't want. I was like, surely I can just make my way to be checked myself. But that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to do OBS. They wanted me to keep my legs up on a pillow. But Dad just lay next to me and held my hand, which was the nicest thing ever. He was brilliant. And then, of course, Ed came as quickly as he could as well. And then the next day, so I had to like go through the night, which... it only got worse.
Mm.
It was obvious that I was miscarrying then. And then had to go to just get checked to make sure that everything had come away.
Yeah.
Which obviously is not very nice either. You're basically having a scan to look for nothing being there. And yeah, it was horrible. It was really horrible.
Was it painful as well?
Yeah, very.
And that's another thing that I feel like people don't talk about that. So only now further down the line, knowing you and having other people who have gone through a miscarriage, did I know that...
It's like really severe cramping and like not nice. And what was really sad as well, and I think we were talking about this the other week actually, is that because we were a few days away from scan, we... had already thought about how we were going to tell everybody that we were pregnant, and Nan had been really poorly, hadn't she, in hospital?
Oh, yeah.
And she was getting better, and I was like, how about, I said to Ed, we'll tell Nan first and then we'll like video her, and then that can be like she can tell everyone. So we'd already, like, I think people talk about, like, when you're pregnant, you plan ahead. You're like, oh, we've got this and this and this, and this is going to happen, and we're going to have a baby in the summer or whatever. And
also, when you get so close to the 12-week scan, you're days away from it. So so you then think, we're safe.
Yeah, yeah, you really do. And then, of course, you go through all the things of, and CTAL talks about this quite a lot, about like feeling like a failure. You sort of go, oh my God, we shouldn't have gone to Mexico. Like, I immediately thought maybe that vaccination that they said was okay wasn't. I was putting my trust in that being okay. They tell you, you know, obviously flying in pregnancy is not the best, most recommended thing to do. It was a blooming long flight as well. So you go through all that, but then you kind of, I think you just have to make peace with yourself and go, look, if it was going to be okay, it was going to be okay. And actually, they did tell me, which was kind of a bit more reassuring, that they thought the pregnancy had stopped much earlier on, but it hadn't told my body yet. So actually, you can lose the baby and your body isn't aware of that. So all the symptoms carry on. So your boobs still hurt, you still feel sick.
And you were like, on your honeymoon, you were knackered and you felt sick all the time, but you were okay, and because you were so excited that you were having a baby. And even now it makes me really sad, because in your second bedroom at home, you've got that wall that's got all of the lovely photos on from your honeymoon. But originally, you didn't want to put up any photos from your honeymoon because it made you too sad about the baby. And
because I remember
so sad.
Like, it was like an excitable secret. Like, nobody knows. And I remember Ed taking a picture of me by the pool. This is really vain, by the way. Took a picture of me by the pool and I was like, I don't even look pregnant. Look at me. I actually look quite good in this photo. Not too bloated. Excellent. Like, this is a good angle. And like thinking, all my friends, because I'm so bad at keeping secrets. If I'm excited about something, everybody knows. So I remember also thinking, God, my friends are going to be so proud of me for keeping this a secret, because they've always said, oh, if you're pregnant, you'll just tell us straight away and we'll know. And I didn't. And part of me wished I had, because then it wouldn't have been so hard to explain, A, that I had been pregnant, but B, that sadly, that was no more. So actually, when I fell pregnant with Chester, I wasn't so bothered about telling people early on, which I think some people might be because they think they might miscarry again, but I'd rather my friends and family knew to support me through that if that was to happen again. And that's kind of what I learned from the first time round, and really keeping it that 12-week secret.
Well, at least you have Chester now.
I do.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. Yes. No, but it is. And I, you know, there are so many more people. And when I actually did tell people, it came out, you know, a lot more people I knew had, and they did talk to me about it. So that was nice. So how does the interview with CTAL make you feel about the percentage?
I remember immediately after doing it, it almost made me want to have a baby more, because I feel like I absorbed her hopefulness and her you know, the amount that she wanted it, the lengths that she was going to try and have a baby. But it also made me scared that if I decide, yes, I want to do it, what if I have to go through all this stuff? So I think it made me, it almost made me a bit tentative about it.
Yeah, apprehensive about making a decision and then maybe not.
Yeah, making a decision and not being, but then not being able to kind of follow through with the decision. So, percentage, I'm lower down than I was. I think I'm probably back to 70-30. So I'm still pro, but a nervous for to baby. Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it really help us out, but it will guarantee that you won't bump into any beautiful, glowing pregnant ladies while you're trying not to think about babies. Join me next time when I try to decide whether to baby or not to baby.
Next time on To Baby or Not To Baby.
You want desperately to hear some good news because it has been just so invasive and so intense, and other people have had success, so why not you?